there was a steady flow of traffic going either up or down those long twisting paths. From different sections of the city, filthy black smoke rose from multiple chimneys. There was a constant, never-ending ringing that filled the air. When Waldo first heard it, he'd thought it some sort of bell. There was no order to it, though, and no halt. The buildings here were a bit different from the ones Waldo had seen in Stratford. Nearly all were just one or two stories tall, and unlike in the previous city, very few of them were painted. They were a mass of gray and brown stone, jammed together amid a confusing tangle of roads.
"What a depressing, noisy place," Alice said.
"It's disorderly," Waldo said in condemnation.
"Who would design a city like this?" "Cities aren't designed, darling. They're like children. They're born and they grow. No one can know how they will turn out."
Waldo shook his head.
"The altar was planned out from the very start. The streets are all impeccably straight, and the buildings are all uniform. It's a place of perfect order."
"Then from what I hear, it's probably the only one in the world like that."
"That's undoubtedly so.
More's the pity."
"We'll need to find a place to stay and eat. We'll also need to replace everything we lost. That means backpacks, clothes, blankets, traveling supplies, and I suppose we may as well get a tent, too."
She put a hand protectively over her purse.
"It's a horrible waste of coin, but I guess there's no avoiding it. Maybe I'll get a job to help pay for everything."
"All that can wait. The most important thing is to find my new servant."
He began casting his detection spell.
"Tarano sevel, monstri des, noratal esaki esavaratos."
As soon as the spell was complete, Middleton managed to give him another surprise. Waldo took in a sharp breath.
"Damn! What's wrong?"
"This is going to take longer than I expected."
To his eyes, Alice was now ablaze with reddish light. When he looked in the direction of the city, he spotted hundreds, possibly thousands of similar lights. Stratford had had a grand total of 4. It had been very easy to distinguish Alice's signature from the much weaker lights being given off by the other 3. The sheer number of lights he was looking at now made that impossible. There were some monsters in every section of the city, but most of them were concentrated within the various hills. Each hill was so flooded in reddish light, there was no way to distinguish from a distance if one of them might be stronger than all the rest. He quickly explained the situation to Alice.
"Why are there so many more monsters here than there were in Stratford?"
Alice shrugged.
"How should I know?"
Waldo shook his head with helpless frustration.
"I was hoping to find my new familiar right away, but there's no chance of that.
We'll have to trek through this entire place until I can spot the strongest light." He glanced at the horrible ball of fire and estimated they had a couple more hours of daylight remaining. Searching at night would make the glows more distinctive, but it would be dangerous to wander about a city filled with uncivilized barbarians after dark.
"Let's find a place to stay tonight. We can begin searching tomorrow."
"All right, darling."
The reaction Waldo received was similar to that in Fall River. People would nod at him respectfully, but make sure to keep a safe distance. He noticed that there were a great many more city guard here in Middleton than there had been in Stratford. They traveled the streets in groups ranging from 4 to 10. All of them looked to be quite well armed, wearing chainmail and iron helms. They mostly carried swords, though a few had spears or double-headed axes. Perhaps 1 in 3 of the men he saw were members of the city guard. Even most of the commoners were armed. Nearly every man who wasn't wearing chainmail had a long knife or even a short sword tucked into a belt or in a scabbard.
"The people here seem very well armed. Do they have bandits nearby?"
Alice frowned.
"Not that I've heard of. The land is pretty safe outside of the marshes."
"Then why does everyone have a sword?"
"I've no idea. We would get merchants at the inn all the time. They sold bars of wrought iron, tools, nails, and blades, or they were passing through to someplace else. I can tell you the ringing is from all the blacksmiths working their forges, and all that smoke comes from the fires melting iron from the ore."
"You seem to know a bit about this place."
"Oh, it's nothing. Men always love to talk about their work and their homes. They call Middleton the Iron City because there's so much iron in the ground here. The Blacksmith's Guild is based here, and there are hundreds of them working all day long from sunrise to sunset. They say that if you live here, you don't even notice the ringing."
"I find that hard to believe.
They all told me it stops with sunset."
"I suppose I should be grateful for small favors.
I bet we'll be safe as long as we're here,"
Alice said, trying hard to look at the bright side.
"Your grandfather wouldn't want to come to a place with so many armed men, would he?"
"As a matter of fact, I don't think he will. Though, I suspect he would be more worried about running into a white mage than any number of city guards. I'm sure he'll wait until we leave to come after us again."
"Well, at least we're safe for now."
"We're never safe," he reminded her quietly.
"Don't worry, darling. I'll keep you safe."
As they walked along a twisting street, A large cart with two shoulder-high wheels came around a bend. The cart was piled high with sacks. It was being pulled along by a goblin. The creature wore a leather harness around its wide chest and an iron collar around its thick, bulbous throat. The collar was connected back to the cart by a thick chain that rattled with each shuffling step. Walking beside the cart was a small man wearing a leather apron, holding a worn riding crop in his right hand.
"Keep moving, you stupid beast," the man said. "We still have to make one more delivery after this."
To emphasize his words, he struck the goblin on his arm with a loud, audible thwack. The monster gave a slight grunt, but did not otherwise acknowledge being struck. He did not look back at his apparent owner or in any way hurry his pace. The common people walking along paid no mind, though Alice noted that the squad of soldiers who had just passed were watching. Walda didn't seem to pay any notice.
"Did you see that?" Alice demanded.
"What?"
"That man! He hit that defenseless goblin for no reason at all."
"So?" Waldo's rather indifferent reply earned him a sharp look. It was clear she was upset with him, but he had no idea why.
"I told you there were a large number of monsters in this city. It's not surprising they'd be used as draft animals. I saw a goblin pulling a cart in Stratford, too."
"That would have been Nuruk, who works for John Millen. Master Millen would never beat Nuruk.
Well, not unless he did something to deserve it, of course. Just now, though, that goblin was hit for no reason at all. It was like how some people will whip an ox or a mule to make it move."
"Then I suppose he was hit for the same reason."
"Goblins are different from oxen or mules."
"Very true," Waldo admitted. "So far as I know, oxen and mules very rarely use swords or roast humans for a meal." That earned him another sharp look.
"You know what I mean."
"Actually, no, I don't. I have no idea what point you are trying to make."
"Goblins can talk. You can tell them what to do and they can understand you. You don't have to treat them as if they were animals."
Walda looked at her curiously.
"And how should you treat a slave?"
"They aren't even slaves," she said unhappily. "Slaves are at least people. Goblins and other monsters really are just animals to most folk."
"Then I suppose it's lucky for them goblin meat tastes so bad."
"This isn't funny. Who was joking?"
"What, you've eaten goblin?"
"Yes, but only once or twice. It's very chewy and tough. Still better than gremlin, though."
"How could you eat a goblin?" Alice asked, horrified.
"Fried, usually, though it can also be baked."
"Really?"
Waldo nodded, still not understanding why she was so upset.
"Would you eat a succubus, too?"
"Don't be ridiculous."
"Well, that's a relief.
Succubi possess immense mystical characteristics. Eating one would be a waste. You would chop the body up to use every bit for potion components." Alice just stared at him.
"Please tell me you're joking."
"In my country, we do not venerate the dead. The spirits go wherever the dark powers will them to go. The bodies are treated as a resource. If they cannot be used for food or spell components, most are revived so that they can continue to work."
"So, when you die, you'll be a walking corpse?"
Alice's mouth twisted with disgust.
"No, members of the seven families are never turned into common undead. It would be beneath our dignity. Our bodies are simply burned. But even for the heads of families, there are no rituals or prayers. The body is simply disposed of."
"So, they just burn you up like a log in the fire? You don't even have a funeral?"
"Everything that lives must one day die. Even the gods must perish when the long night sets. That is a universal truth, and we accept it. We do not hold life sacred or make any ridiculous pretenses about it. You were born, you live, and one day you die. And unless you are called back, you will go to whatever place is reserved for you. Funerals and rituals won't change that, so why bother?"
"Sounds very glum."
"Not really. Knowing that life must end pushes us to do as much as we can while we're here."
"So, I guess that means when I die I'm going to be chopped up."
She sounded resigned. "What would you like done instead?"
"I want to be given a proper funeral and buried somewhere the sun shines. There should be flowers and a gravestone with my name. I would also like you to mourn for me for 1 year before you find a new wife."
"You've actually thought about this."
"Well, naturally. People die all the time, of fever, or the flux, or in childbirth. I would have liked to have had a proper funeral and a grave. It's proof that you lived once, and that someone cared enough about you to do you that last service. But if I'm your wife, I suppose I'll have to accept your customs. I'll just have to try and live as long as I can before I end up in a bunch of bottles on a shelf."
Waldo stared at her for a long moment. "If you die before I do, I will give you a proper funeral. I will bury you somewhere the horrible ball of fire blazes and have a stone marker with your name placed there. I will bring flowers, and though I don't see the point, I will wait a year before marrying."
"Really?"
"Yes.
Waldo hurried his pace. Come on, let's find somewhere to rest.
Smiling, Alice quickened her step to remain at his side. Chapter 34 The Inn of the White Horse. The Inn of the White Horse was an unadorned and typical building on the Street of Nails. It was two stories, made of brown brick, jammed between a smithy to one side and a general store to the other. On the faded, weather-beaten sign that hung outside the door, the horse was more gray than white. The neighborhood was not one of Middleton's best. It belonged to the common folk. The people who lived and worked here stoked the furnaces and hauled in the wood for the fires of the smithies and forges. They loaded and unloaded wagons, brought water, made meals, and did all the little tasks necessary to keep the blacksmiths and the merchants happy. The people who liked to visit the inn were hard folk, who lived hard lives and liked to sometimes drink and talk and argue about all the things that were wrong with the world. Tyrone Williams stood behind his bar listening to his customers' shouts and to the endless banging of hammer and anvil. He had long since learned how to ignore both. 30 years he'd been running this inn, going from a young man to an old one. In that time he'd buried his dear Anna, may the Tarasa grant her peace, and seen his two little girls get married and start families of their own. Tyrone had also seen himself slowly grow gray and fat. Those were the main changes. Everything else stayed the same. He'd heard the same complaints, the same arguments, and the same stories repeated endlessly. The bosses were always loud-mouthed idiots who never appreciated their workers and never paid a decent wage. They complained about how the occasional noble would not even notice them, or worse, when they did. They complained about the women they wanted. They complained about the women they had. When they were young, they complained about their parents controlling them. When they got older, they complained about not being able to control their children. They complained about the rain and the snow and the summer heat and the winter cold and on. The one thing that never changed was that there was always something to complain about. Tyrone took out a rag and wiped down the bar. The wood was stained from countless spills, and there were cracks of varying sizes. The stone floor was always dirty, and there was a layer of dust caked onto the walls. Every table and every chair was worn, and there was always the smell of cabbage, sweat, and ale.
Good enough, he judged.
Every table was occupied with customers eating cabbage stew and drinking ale. He knew his customers. They didn't come here to revel in cleanliness and brightly polished oak counters. They came to fill their bellies with cheap food and cheap ale and to talk free among their own kind.
They also like playing with the barmaids.
He had two girls who worked for him, along with a cook and an assistant in the kitchen. Both Brienne and Nicola were sitting with customers right now, laughing and talking. He would have to yell to get them serving tables again. Long experience told him they would both have to be replaced soon. He always hired young, pretty girls. The men loved to look at and chat them up. They never lasted long. Most of them were looking for a husband. The ones who weren't and were serious about earning coin always ended up moving on to a more profitable line of work. It was an inconvenience, but the customers liked having attractive, unattached girls serving them, so he dealt with it. The rooms upstairs were usually empty, and the coins that filled his till were nearly always copper. He usually touched silver only once a month when he went out to make his stock purchases. In his life, he had held gold only a handful of times. The bar was filled, though, almost every night, and except during the riots, things were more or less peaceful. There were the occasional drunken brawls, but he kept a wooden cudgel behind the bar for those times, and if things ever got out of hand, the city guards were always there to crack a few heads and stuff them into stocks. All in all, it wasn't such a bad life. Tyrone liked his customers and he liked being an innkeeper. Really, the worst thing about it was the boredom. There were always the same faces and the same voices. He just wished that now and again something interesting might happen. That was when the door opened, and a white mage and the most beautiful woman he had ever laid eyes on walked into the bar. The customers who saw them were every bit as startled as he was and closed their mouths to stare. It got so quiet that the only sound was the banging of iron coming from outside the walls. It was not unusual for there to be at least one or two white mages in Middleton at any given time. However, they always stayed in the Baron's place. Tyrone could not remember ever hearing of one visiting the working quarter. In the 30 years he had owned the inn, this was the first time any sort of wizard had ever entered it. The mage stood there, just inside the doorway, calmly regarding the room. His straw-colored hair and pale yellow eyes would have made him stand out even without the white robes. Just the presence of a white mage made Tyrone nervous. They were good people and served a good cause, but some of them could be rather zealous at times. Rumors had it that the Baron and even the King dealt with them very cautiously. Bad things could happen to you if you made an enemy of one of them.
The woman who was standing just behind him received almost as much interest as the mage did. Her looks were every bit as foreign and exotic as his. She had long, flowing red hair and eyes that were a shade of violet. She was wearing a plain, white blouse and a long, tan skirt, and she had a cloth sack over her left shoulder. Her clothes were a bit tight-fitting and outlined a very tempting figure. He'd visited a few brothels in his time, but Tyrone had never once seen anyone half so captivating. "Who is the proprietor here?" the mage asked. The faces of most of the people turned to stare in Tyrone's direction.
"That would be me, my lord."
"I'm not a lord," the mage told him. "I am Waldo Rabbit. You may simply refer to me as Master Rabbit." There were a couple startled laughs that were quickly covered up. Most of those present looked uncertain as to whether or not this was a joke. Since the mage appeared to be serious, they had to pretend to take him at his word. Tyrone was just as uncertain, but decided to play along.
"Well, how may I serve you, Master Rabbit?"
Before the man could answer, the woman put her sack down and stepped up beside him.
"Darling," she said in a voice as sweet as honey, "why don't you let me handle this?"
"Why? I can deal with a peasant." At every table, mouths tightened and eyes hardened. These people knew they were looked down upon, but they didn't appreciate hearing it from some foreigner in their inn. To the girl's credit, she noticed the reaction. The mage seemed completely oblivious.
"Darling, be nice, or you might end up swimming again."
"What do you mean?" Master Rabbit asked.
"I am being quite polite, especially considering he's just a peasant."
"Don't call him a peasant," a burly workman at one of the tables called out.
"Would you prefer commoner?"
There were growls from several tables. Tyrone glanced about nervously. The last thing he wanted was to have a brawl involving a white mage. Mercifully, the lovely angel took charge of the situation. She elbowed his ribs and shook a finger in his face.
"Don't say anything else or you really may go for another swim."
Not waiting for a reply, she walked up to the bar.
Walk might not have really described it. Her hips swayed with every step. All eyes stared longingly as she crossed the room.
Tyrone found himself mesmerized like every other man there. When she came to a halt across from him, he had to remind himself to breathe. Staring into those captivating eyes, he suddenly felt like a love-struck boy again. Reaching across the bar, she placed one hand gently on his arm, making his heart race.
"Please forgive my husband," she said in that soft, lilting voice. "He didn't mean to be rude."
"Of course," Tyrone mumbled. "It's fine. You're his wife, then?"
Though it was ridiculous, he felt disappointed.
"Yes, I am Alice Rabbit. Please feel free to call me Alice. My husband and I would like a room for the night and a meal, please."
Tyrone nodded. Despite the foolish thoughts coursing through his brain, he tried to remember he was an innkeeper.
"I have a room available. It costs 50 copper tracks. Meals and drinks are separate. A bowl of cabbage stew is 5 tracks and a mug of ale is 1.
"Cabbage stew? Is that all you serve here?"
Normally, if anyone asked him that, his answer was to tell them to eat nothing. Hearing the hint of disappointment from her made him wish there was something else he could offer her.
"I am sorry, Alice. I run a plain place for plain folk."
"Maybe they'd be happier staying in the Baron's castle,"
Brienne called out.
"You be quiet,"
Tyrone said. Of course, she and Nicola were the only ones not enthralled.
"I am sorry," Alice said, holding up her hands. "I did not mean to complain. I'm sure the stew is delicious, and it certainly is reasonably priced. But you see, my husband and I are trying to save our coin right now, so I was hoping you might agree to give us free room and board in exchange for my services."
"Services?" he replied weakly.
All sorts of thoughts were running through his mind. He was sure his dear Inna, Maitre Rosagranner Peace, would forgive him. She was dead, after all, and he was still flesh and blood. Alice nodded and pretended not to notice where his eyes had drifted to.
"I have experience as a barmaid. In return for free lodging and food, I will work here for as many nights as we stay. I will get to keep my tips, of course."
She stared intently into his eyes.
"What do you say?"
Feeling a little lightheaded, Tyrone would have agreed to anything at that moment.
"It's a deal."
The room upstairs was 15 square feet. The only furniture was a plain bed pressed up against the wall and covered with a single brown blanket. There was a small window that provided a view of an alleyway choked with garbage. The innkeeper had insisted Alice begin working immediately. She had handed him the sack and simply promised to come up to their room once her shift was done. Shortly after he'd gone upstairs, one of the other barmaids had brought him a wooden bowl of green stew, along with a pewter mug filled with a foamy liquid that was the color of dirt. Though dubious, Waldo was very hungry. He took the wooden spoon and dug into the soup. It certainly wasn't anything he would deliberately choose, but it wasn't actually too bad. Along with cabbage, there were potatoes, carrots, and chunks of bread mixed in as well. Though not exactly fine cuisine, it did fill his stomach. He ate the entire bowl and wouldn't have minded a second. The ale tasted more like rye bread than anything else. He drank about half and then set the mug aside. Through the door, Waldo could easily hear the shouts and howls of laughter coming from downstairs. The noise somehow reminded him of yapping dogs in heat. Even he hadn't been able to miss how they had stared at Alice. Ignorant savages. The idea that he, a corpse lover, would have to deal with such people as near equals was humiliating. That Alice would have to serve them was sickening. He was supposed to be the only one she served. "What are you doing?" he had demanded right after she'd made her agreement. With strangers watching, she had stepped close to him and lowered her voice. "I am paying for our room and food. I'm also going to make some tips, too." "You don't need to do that. We can just pay for our stay. The room would be half a silver per night, and you don't know how long we'll be here. The food and drink would be on top of that. The supplies we just bought were 3 dalters. I don't want to waste any more coin if we don't have to." "We can afford it. I don't want you serving all these peasants."
"Aw, that is so sweet."
She picked up the cloth sack with one hand and tossed it to him. It was heavy, and he stumbled back a couple steps after catching it.
"You don't need to worry. I'll be fine."
She began serving, and he was forced to trudge upstairs alone. He heard a fresh round of laughter coming from downstairs. Waldo considered going down and observing whatever was going on. He dismissed the notion almost immediately, as it would be beneath his dignity. It was also foolish. Alice was used to dealing with this sort, and if worse came to worse, she was a succubus. It wasn't as though she needed his protection. Waldo shook his head in mild frustration. What were these feelings? Why did the thought of those mundanes ogling her bother him so much? Why did he feel so possessive of her? He did not want her around other men. Waldo knew these thoughts and feelings were not a normal part of the master-servant relationship, but then what part of his connection with Alice was? "I am wasting time," he said to himself. "Let me take care of the things I can actually fix." Reaching into a pocket, he took out his wand and pointed it at the bed. "Levitaros." Just as it happened in the forest, he felt the mana flow through him and into the wand. The force of his spell was greatly magnified, and the bed rose a foot above the floor. Levitation was one of the basics near every magic user could use. Before, though, Waldo had never been able to lift anything heavier than a book. Now, with his wand, he could move something as large and heavy as a bed with almost no effort. He remembered the streams of fire he'd cast. Though they had been ineffective, he had been able to really work destructive magic. His new wand really fit him perfectly. With it in his hand, he was immensely stronger than he had ever been before. The thought both pleased and worried him. On the one hand, acquiring power was everything. Finally being able to use combat magic was a tremendous achievement. He was now a genuine threat, and if worse came to worse, could fight on his own. On the other hand, all this newfound strength came from a soulwood wand. Such wands were used almost exclusively by white mages. What did that say about him? What would the council and others make of that? He was going around in white robes using a soulwood wand and acting as a white mage. When all this was over, assuming he survived, what sort of reputation would he have? Why is nothing ever simple? He moved the bed to the center of the room and set it down. He then went over to the large sack that he had left in the corner. Before coming to the inn, they had stopped by the general's store that was next door to it. There they had bought some spare clothes, blankets, a tent, and some equipment he would need. From the sack he took out a piece of chalk. Getting down on his hands and knees, he began to draw a circle around the bed. When that was complete, he drew runes and symbols inside the circle. He also intended to put wards on the door and window to prevent the entry of any sort of undead. While far from perfect, he would do everything possible to protect both himself and Alice while they were forced to remain in this place. The Inn of the White Horse was only about half the size of the Inn of Lost Sighs. It was also not as busy. At her old place, more than 200 men would sometimes pack in the common room. Here, Alice never counted more than about 40. This place was also nowhere near as clean or as polished as her old one. Elsa had always insisted that everything had to shine. She had always wanted things as close to perfect as possible. As long as the doors were open, Elsa would always be there, riding her to make sure she was working. By comparison, Tyrone hardly said a word to her once it was clear she really was a barmaid. He was happy to just stay behind the bar, mooning over her as she went from table to table. With three girls to share the work, Alice found it pretty easy. Two things remained exactly the same, though. The other girls she worked with hated her, and all the men wanted more than just her attention.
"Don't think you're special just 'cause you have a nice figure," Brienne had said to her almost as soon as they were introduced. "Your eyes are ugly, and your hair is as pretty as a sheepdog's."
That had gotten a squeal of laughter from Nicola, along with a quick nod. Alice had merely smiled. She had learned to ignore much worse.
"You don't need to worry. My husband and I won't be here long."
"Who's worried?"
Brienne snapped. Alice continued to smile, and gave up the idea of trying to make friends with the two of them. She had never had any female friends. Just like always, she was going to be resented. Dealing with the customers had been just as challenging. Alice was an old hand at serving men who were looking to grab her or get a quick feel. She knew to always keep her eyes open and how to dance out of reach. In her old inn, the regulars all knew better than to try and clutch at her. Here, all the men were determined to pull her onto their lap or get a squeeze. Alice must have warned at least 24 customers that she didn't like being touched. She was happy to talk to them and listen to their stories, but that was all. Of course, none of them believed her. They all thought she was playing some sort of game, and as the night went on, their efforts got more and more frenzied. Eventually, a bulky blacksmith's apprentice named Mackin succeeded in grabbing hold of her ass when she was looking in the other direction. Her reaction had been instinctive and instant. She'd eked and spun around, punching him in the face hard enough to knock him clean out of his chair. The common room had erupted in laughter and cheers. Many of the men lifted their mugs to her. When his friends helped Mackin back to his seat, they all began to tease him mercilessly. He didn't seem to mind either. Mackin ordered a few more mugs of ale and actually tried to grab at her again. If it had been a man that had punched him like that, it would have certainly led to a fight. Coming from a barmaid, it was instead treated as something comic. This was how her night went. She served bowls of stew and mugs of ale while enduring the open dislike of her co-workers and trying to avoid a forest of grabbing hands, all the while smiling at and playing up to those very same grabby men. When one of them tipped her a copper track, she thanked them as warmly and sweetly as she could. It was long, tiring, boring work, but nothing she wasn't used to. Since most of the men had to be at work the next morning, the place began to empty out well before midnight. Alice and the other girls were already cleaning up as the last customer sat at his table, slowly draining a final mug as he stared longingly at Alice as she wiped down tables. Finally, Tyrone came out from around the bar with a 3-foot-long sword in his hands.
"Come on, Matthew. It's time for you to get home. Let me help you."
The innkeeper helped the man up to his feet, and slid the sword into an empty scabbard. Everyone who came into the inn was required to give up his sword. Swaying slightly, the man staggered over to Alice and held out a copper track to her.
"You was real sweet, gal. Hope to see you tomorrow."
Alice took the coin from him gratefully. As she did so, he tried to lean in to steal a kiss. She had no trouble stepping back to stay clear. Smiling, she shook a finger at him.
"Now, now, I'm a married woman, and my husband wouldn't like me kissing another man, especially not one as cute as you."
His face lit up, and he looked absolutely thrilled.
"I wish I'd have met you first."
"I don't." "That's sweet."
Matthew clearly wanted to keep talking to her, but Tyrone was at his back, gently pushing him toward the door. Once he was gone, the inn was officially closed.
"He never tips,"
Brienne said, sounding unhappy. Alice slid the coin into a pocket sewn into her skirt. It jingled along with the other tips she had earned.
"Then I am grateful he was in such a generous mood tonight."
The light-hearted answer only made the other girl look even more indignant.
"Why are you staying here anyway? I always heard that white maids just stayed with the Baron when they visited."
"My husband has his reasons."
"You and your husband can stay as long as you like," Tyrone told her. "I'm right honored to have you both here."
"Thank you."
"Humph."
Brienne swept the floor with added fury.
"Can I ask a question?"
"Sure now. You can ask anything."
Tyrone was eager to help her.
"Why do so many of the men here wear swords? I'm from Stratford, and except for the city guard and the nobles, no one else is allowed to have one."
"Oh."
Tyrone sounded a bit embarrassed.
"Well, that's on account of the goblins. Sometimes we have some trouble with them."
"Trouble?"
"Nothing you need worry about. They can get a bit bothersome is all."
"What does that mean?"
They'll get it in their heads to just start killing people all of a sudden,
Brienne told her with a smirk.
One will be acting normal, obedient as you please, then bam!
She slammed a fist down on the table.
They just go crazy and try to rip apart anybody close to them.
Really? There are a few goblins in Stratford. Nothing like that ever happened there.
Brienne shrugged.
We have thousands of goblins here. Maybe you just got a few of the timid ones. They're always dangerous.
No, they're not, Tyrone said sharply. There's hardly ever trouble.
There are always some go crazy every year,
Brienne insisted.
A handful.
But enough for most of the men here to carry swords, Alice noted.
The Baron's castle has plenty of guards, Brienne pointed out.
It's safe enough here, Tyrone said. The place is clean enough. You can go home now.
Fine, Brienne said.
She gave her employer a knowing look.
Try not to hurt yourself.
As his two other barmaids headed to the kitchen and the back entrance, he turned to Alice.
There really is nothing to worry about. The goblins are just dumb animals. It's sort of the way from time to time dogs go mad. No one knows why, you just know to put them down when it happens.
Goblins aren't animals. They can talk and think. Doesn't that make them people?
People? Goblins? I grant they can talk and do more than a horse or a dog can, but no goblin is more than a beast. I'm right surprised to hear you think that. You've been married to a white mage and all. Don't they say we need to get rid of all the monsters?
My husband is very enlightened.
I'm right sure he is, Tyrone said uncomfortably.
I'm going up to my room now. Alice gave him a gracious bow. Thank you for your great kindness.
You are more than welcome, Alice.
At the top of the stairs, Alice took out and counted what she had earned. 40 copper tracks, almost half a silver dalter in just one night. That was not at all bad. When she entered their room, Waldo was already fast asleep. There was only a bit of moonlight coming in through the window. She could see in the dark, though, and saw chalk symbols scrawled all over the door, around the window, all over the floor, and much of the walls. The bed had a circle drawn around it, with more symbols on the inside of it. Waldo had explained to her about protective circles and seals. He had spent quite a bit of time doing all this to help keep them safe. She smiled at him. Unlike the false smiles she'd kept plastered on her face all night, this one was genuine. She shut the door and slipped out of her skirt and blouse, leaving only her small clothes. Alice went over to the bed, making sure not to step on any of the chalk on the floor. She pulled back the scratchy wool blanket and slid in beside him. Alice wrapped her arms around Waldo and rested her head on his chest, careful not to disturb him. He was very warm. The sound of his breathing was comforting. She closed her eyes and drifted off to a peaceful sleep. Chapter 35 Protective Wards. When Alice woke the next morning, she was alone in bed. She sat up.
Darling?
Good morning. Waldo was sitting on the floor with a wooden bowl in his hands.
What are you doing? Is that breakfast?
No, these are ashes mixed with a little water.
I need you to take your clothes off.
Alice's face turned beet red, and she pulled the blanket up in front of her.
Oh, so you're done waiting and want to enjoy a husband's privileges? I guess that's all right. Please, just be gentle with me, though.
Well, of course I'll be gentle. I'm only going to use my fingers.
Really? Just your fingers? I don't mind if you use something, bigger. You are my husband after all. I don't expect you to be that gentle.
Waldo blinked. Alice, I'm going to draw on your back to place protective runes on you. When we're outside this room, they will help keep you hidden from any scrying or detection magic. They will also protect you from magical attack.
Oh,
she said, feeling embarrassed all over again. Now take your clothes off and turn your back to me. The wards are temporary, so we'll have to do this each morning.
Every morning?
That's right.
Well, if you think it's best.
She turned her back to him and pulled off her shift. He sat down on the edge of the bed and with one finger began to draw runes and symbols on her. As Waldo did so, she couldn't keep from twitching.
Stay still. Alice was giggling. Sorry, darling. I'm ticklish. What a fun way to start the day, she thought.
Why are there so many monsters in this city?
Waldo complained.
They're everywhere. It's like undead and altar.
Alice looked about worriedly, but no one seemed to have overheard.
one of the advantages of people all keeping their distance.
"Darling, you need to be more careful with what you say."
They were walking along the endless, twisting streets of Middleton. Alice would not need to return to work until late in the afternoon. Right now it was getting on towards midday. She was accompanying her husband as he searched. He looked over to her.
"Why? Would a white mage know anything about that?"
"Oh, right. That sort of just slipped out."
"You need to be more careful."
"I know." He turned away from her. "This place is annoying, though. Everywhere you go, you hear clanging. The air smells of smoke. There's too much light, and I don't just mean from the horrible ball of fire." He waved a frustrated hand at the road. There were two wagons coming up it, both being pulled by goblins.
"My spell makes the whole city look tinted with red. It might as well be on fire. There's so much red light I can't pick anything out."
"I'm sure you will find him eventually, darling. There's no rush. I wouldn't mind if we had to stay here a while." "Are you enjoying being a barmaid again?"
"I don't mind it. We're safe for now, and I'm earning decent coin."
"Plus you have all those commoners lusting after you. Being what you are, you must enjoy that."
"Are you jealous?"
"Certainly not. You belong to me."
She liked hearing that. "Yes, I do."
"I'm willing to admit it's convenient."
"I'm glad you think so."
"Now you can get your craving satisfied without attacking me."
"What?"
"You won't need me to satisfy your hunger for male lust. The way those men were staring at you, I'm sure you have enough to last you a month at least."
"Hey, you can't hold that against me. It's not like I want them to."
"I wasn't complaining. It's a relief not to have you constantly attacking me every night." Smack.
"Ow!" "Once again, you need to be more careful of what you say."
As Waldo rubbed the back of his head, the wagons rolled past. Each was being pulled by a single goblin in a leather harness and collar. The creatures thumped along without making a sound. One of the drivers poked his with the butt end of a spear.
"Move along," he growled.
The goblin kept going at the same pace. The human sitting in the cart did not seem surprised.
"Why did he hit them, then?"
"It's awful," Alice said. "Why must they be treated so badly just because they're not human? How would you expect them to be treated?" Alice frowned at him.
"They're slaves in your country, right? Your people are just as bad, doing that to them just because of what they are."
"Everyone in Alteroth who is not a member of one of the seven families is either a slave or a serf. How well they are treated has nothing to do with whether or not they are human. In Alteroth, the slaves receive different levels of consideration depending on how valuable they are. Unique and powerful monsters like vampires can actually rise to positions of great privilege. People with special skills, such as carpenters or engineers, are granted certain liberties. When a slave child is born who has the ability to cast magic, he or she will be adopted into whichever family owns them. If they prove strong enough in the dark arts, it's even possible to be adopted into one of the main families." Waldo looked proud. "In my country, ability counts before everything else."
"What if the parents don't want their child adopted?"
"Why would that matter?" Alice gave an annoyed shake of the head.
"What about all the ones who aren't special?"
"They're put to work in whatever way best serves the owner's needs. Most goblins are trained to be soldiers. They're stronger and more aggressive than humans."
"Well, that sounds a little bit better, I suppose. But do any of them get to choose what they do?"
"Of course not. They're slaves. The only choice they are given is to obey or to die." Alice was reminded of all the threats from Elsa.
"Is there any place where monsters can just live how they want?"
"Certainly. Outside of Avalon and their alliance, almost every country has some wilderness that isn't fully controlled. In Alteroth, there are mountains and highlands where monsters live outside our grasp. Here in Lothos, I understand they thrive in the marshes to the north. Almost every country in the Shattered Lands has some place where monsters flourish, where they get to live as savagely as they please. Go far enough to the east, past the last human settlement, and you will enter Ostagrad, the eastern wilderness. There the orcs, goblins, trolls, ogres, and all the other races live wild and free. It's the men who have to hide and survive like animals."
"You mean there really is such a place?" Alice asked. "I always thought it was just a story to scare children with."
He chuckled. "It's as real as dark mages or succubi."
"I see."
Alice continued walking by his side, thinking for a moment.
"In all those places where monsters have power, how do they treat people?"
"About the same way you treat a nice, fat, suckling pig. So far as I know, none of the other races bother with keeping humans as servants."
"So everywhere in the world, either humans abuse monsters or monsters do the same to humans?"
"Of course. It's nature. The ones who have power always use the ones who do not."
"That's not how it should be. It isn't right, and it isn't fair. Why can't we learn to live together in peace?"
"That's just foolishness.
No, it's not. I'm living proof that monsters and humans can get along.
Waldo nodded sagely. Yes, so long as the monster pretends to be human. It's only when people recognize you that there is a problem. What would happen if you released your true form right now?
Alice didn't look happy. That still doesn't make it fair.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, the world never has been, and never will be fair.
Thank you, dear. That makes me feel so much better.
Waldo nodded. Glad I could help. As Alice and Waldo kept walking, neither of them noticed a seedy figure trailing a block behind them. He was a short, scruffy-looking man in worn work clothes. He made a point to never approach too close to them, while always keeping them in sight. When the two of them returned to the Inn of the White Horse, their shadow finally left. The shabby fellow made his way through the city towards the merchant district. There he came to a modest home and knocked on the front door. A servant answered, recognizing him, and brought him into a den where his master awaited. The home's owner was a middle-aged man dressed impeccably and sitting behind a desk looking over some papers. The small room was filled with shelves and bookcases, all crammed full of various tomes. He had hawk-like green eyes and a very neatly trimmed mustache and goatee. Looking up from his reading material, he glanced casually at his visitor.
"What have you to tell me, Jonas?"
he asked in a refined manner.
"I did like you told me to, Mr. Valos. I done followed them all day."
He gave a slight nod.
"And what did our two guests do?"
"Not much. They just walked all over the place like they was looking for something."
"Did they make any stops? Did they speak with anyone?"
"Only time they stopped was at Millie's place to eat. Didn't talk to no one that I saw, except to get the food."
"Millie's place is near Stamp Hill, isn't it?"
Jonas nodded his head.
"That's right, sir. They went by all the hills like they was looking for somebody. Didn't talk to nobody, though. They just kept walking."
"Did they approach the Baron's palace or talk to any of the guards?"
The man shook his head.
"Didn't go near the palace, sir. They just went back to the White Horse. That's when I come here."
"I see."
Varlos brought his hands together in front of his face. His eyes took on a calculating look. Jonas fidgeted a bit and scratched himself. He didn't like when Mr. Varlos looked like that. It was like he went somewhere. After a moment, the eyes focused on his guest again. Reaching into a desk drawer, the man produced a single silver coin and held it out.
"Well done. I want you to do the same again tomorrow. Follow our white bird wherever he goes."
Jonas eagerly took the money and made it vanish.
"What if the two go different ways?"
"The woman is not important. You follow the magic user. You can go now."
The man bowed and left happily. It wasn't often he did honest work, and it was even less often he got paid so good. As soon as his agent left, Varla sat back in his seat and got the faraway look in his eyes once more. White mages who visited Middleton always stayed with the Baron. It was their common practice to stay with the local ruler or at least with one of the wealthiest or most influential. They did not make it a habit to rent rooms in low-end establishments or fail to announce their arrivals to the local authorities. For that matter, they normally traveled alone, not with a beautiful wife in tow. What was this one up to? When white mages did the unexpected, it tended to make certain people very, very nervous. The whites were well known for their charitable and noble deeds, but they were just as well known for their political manipulations. Could this be some sort of new gambit of theirs? He would have to keep a very close eye on this Waldo rabbit. Chapter 36 Alice is Charming. He was struggling to breathe. Waldo could feel weight pressing down on him. There was a vice-like pressure all around him, tightening, squeezing, slowly constricting him and making it impossible to move or even draw breath. He opened his eyes. He was in bed. The blankets were half tossed aside, and there was pre-dawn light coming through the window. Alice was asleep, her head tucked comfortably on top of his chest just below his chin. Her body was curled up, with her arms wrapped around his abdomen, and her long legs entangled in his. All of her weight was right on top of him. She had on only her small clothes, as did he. Her breasts were pressed against him, and he could feel them distinctly. Her long, fiery red hair was a tangled mess. Though she was asleep, Alice's embrace was like iron. Someone walking in might think it rather cute, sort of like a child holding a favorite rag doll. To Waldo, it felt more like a lion holding on to a future meal. Her body was warm, and her skin deliciously soft to touch.
Unfortunately, not being able to move his arms and having to struggle to breathe kept Walder from fully appreciating these facts.
"Alice,"
he gasped as loudly as he could,
"you're crushing me again."
He had to repeat himself a couple more times before her eyelids fluttered open and she slowly lifted her head. Alice's light violet eyes gradually focused on him. A casual smile lit her lips.
"Morning, darling."
"Good morning, Alice. Could you stop crushing me now?"
Waldo was downstairs, sitting at one of the tables in the empty common room. He gingerly rubbed his sides.
"Every morning. I thought sharing a bed with a beautiful woman was supposed to be a pleasant experience."
He could hear Alice singing from the kitchen in the back. Despite their situation, she was often in a cheerful mood. They had been here for a week. A week. Every day they had gone out through the streets searching. He slowly went blind, staring at all the auras being given off by all the monsters who dwelled here. They would walk and walk and walk until it was time to head back to the inn. He would get a meal and then head upstairs to study his spellbook before going to bed. Alice would also have something to eat and then begin her shift. Waldo was frustrated and beginning to grow desperate. Somewhere out there, his grandfather was still prowling. Just how long would his grandfather continue to wait? An army of ordinary men with swords could not deter an archlich. His grandfather had stayed away so far because there might be mages in this city. An archlich was nearly impossible to destroy with ordinary steel, but was hideously vulnerable to the right spell. That was the reason his grandfather had waited, but its patience would not be unlimited. His grandfather was far from the only threat. He'd had Alice ask a few of the guards if there were any other white mages in Middleton. Waldo had been relieved to learn that there weren't. In Alteroth, all dark mages were taught certain stories that were never shared outside of the families. If two of their kind ran into each other in a foreign land, it was a standard practice to tell one of those stories. If the other one didn't know how it went, it meant he wasn't a true dark mage. If the whites had a similar practice, he would be found out. Then there was the worry that one of the merchants Alice had met back in Stratford would spot her. He had not yet heard any rumors about a flying monster who had once been a barmaid. The news would not be long in arriving, though. The two cities were too close to each other. If anyone connected Alice to that tale, they could expect to have half the city guard come to arrest them both. The longer they stayed here, the more dangerous things became. Alice came out of the kitchen with two bowls in her hand. She was in an annoyingly good mood, and was singing about a robin and a bluebird living together in sin. She placed one of the bowls and a wooden spoon in front of him. Alice sat down in the chair next to him.
"You should eat it while it's nice and hot."
Waldo eyed his food with a distinct lack of enthusiasm.
"I hate porridge."
"That's not being appreciative, darling. I worked over a hot fire to cook this for you."
"In my home," Waldo said wistfully, "the morning meal would be wheat cakes smothered in butter. There would be fresh fruits, nuts, eggs, steamed fish, bacon, and ham. Porridge was the sort of thing the slaves would eat."
"Sounds wonderful."
Alice spooned up a mouthful and swallowed it down.
"So who paid for all that?"
"My mother."
"I don't see your mother here now, and we don't have the money to spend on butter or bacon or ham. The porridge is free, and we're lucky Tyrone doesn't charge us for our meals. If you don't want to eat it, I could make you a baked potato or some cabbage with carrots."
Waldo picked up his spoon. "I never said I wouldn't eat it." Alice tilted her head slightly.
"Why are you in such a gloomy mood this morning?"
"Because we've already been here 7 days, and I still have no idea where my second servant might be."
He shoveled some food into his mouth and ate it reflexively.
"I'm sure we'll find who we're looking for sooner or later, and as long as it's a man or a really, really ugly woman, everything will be fine."
Waldo frowned. Her relentless good cheer was grating on his nerves a bit. He hadn't shared all of his worries with her. There was nothing she could do about them, so there was no reason to burden her. Seeing her so relaxed and optimistic only made his own concerns weigh down even more heavily. "Why are you so happy?"
"Why wouldn't I be? I'm a free woman getting to have breakfast with her precious husband. There's nowhere else in the world I would rather be."
Waldo let out a grunt. Somehow her answer was both endearing and annoying at the same time. The front door opened, and the innkeeper stepped into the common room. In his hands was a small clay jar with a cork stopper. There was a small back room where he stayed when there were guests. Most mornings he was up early helping Alice in the kitchen. Today it would seem he had gone out.
"Good morning, Alice. I got this for you."
He handed the jar to her.
"It's honey."
"Oh, that's so sweet of you. Thank you so much."
Tyrone looked like a puppy that had just had his belly rubbed.
Well, you mentioned yesterday how you wished you had some for your porridge.
Alice nodded. I remember you telling me there wasn't any in the market.
There wasn't, but there is a special herb shop that sells things you can't find at the regular market. They have all sorts of special foods and luxuries. They even have things for the local magic users.
Waldo's face immediately rose from his bowl. You really didn't have to go to so much trouble, Alice told him. Tyrone puffed his chest out.
It was nothing. I don't mind a bit now, so long as it makes you happy.
Alice was about to tell him how grateful she was when Waldo spoke up. Where is this herbal shop? Tyrone blinked, as if noticing he was at the table for the first time.
It's on the Street of Hammers near Baden Hill.
Hurry up and finish eating, Waldo told Alice. I want to visit this place. He began shoveling food into his mouth.
Darling, don't you want to try some honey with your porridge?
Nope.
He stuffed some more down. Eat quickly or I'm leaving without you. The clang of metal striking metal was everywhere. Waldo noticed it less than he had when they first arrived. That only meant it was less of an annoyance. What was annoying him now was the way Alice was dragging her feet.
Come on, I want to get to this shop and see if they have anything useful. It would be nice to get something accomplished for a change.
Alice frowned and began moving even more slowly.
If you don't want to come, just give me the person you can go back to the inn and let the innkeeper fawn over you. His name is Tyrone. We've been staying there long enough for you to remember by now, and I've told you before that I will handle the money. Fine, but in that case, move more quickly.
Alice came to a halt and crossed her arms.
Now what? You've been very rude today. Not just to me, but to Tyrone as well. I only mentioned wanting to get honey yesterday because you didn't like your porridge. Then Tyrone went out and found some without even being asked. You could have at least thanked him for that.
Why? I didn't ask for any favors, and he didn't do it for me. He did it to please you. He has been charmed and will do anything for you.
Well, I am very charming.
Waldo shook his head.
No, you didn't simply charm him. You charmed him. Darling, when you use the same word twice, it still only has one meaning.
Waldo glanced up and down the street to make sure no one was close enough to overhear him. The nearest person was a shabby-looking man about 20 yards behind him.
When I say you charmed the innkeeper, I don't mean with kind words or subtle suggestions you might let him enjoy your body.
Waldo completely failed to notice the sudden blush on Alice's cheeks.
What I mean is the natural ability of a succubus to captivate and mesmerize a man. In short, you made him your willing slave.
I would never do anything like that.
I'm not complaining, Alice. It's one of the main advantages of having a succubus familiar. If anything, I would like you to do it more often. Once a man has been charmed, he will do pretty much anything for you.
No, I can't do anything like that. I mean, I can get men to be nice to me, but that's only because they find me beautiful and I know how to talk to them. I've never done anything like make them willing slaves.
Are you sure? Haven't you ever had a man do exactly what you wanted?
Well, yes, lots of times, in fact, but that didn't have anything to do with any special power.
Uh-huh.
It didn't, she insisted. Gentle words from a pretty face are all it takes with most men.
I'm sure that was the case often, but not every time. Charming requires you look directly into your victim's eyes and desire him to obey you. Even if you were unaware, it would be instinctive for you. It's likely you have been doing it your entire life.
Alice shook her head.
No, I've never done anything like that.
Really? Waldo began looking at the blacksmith shops. There were three just in the immediate area. He pointed to one of them at random. Go in there, go up to the owner, look him in the eyes, and ask him to give you a sword.
What do we need a sword for?
It's just to make a point. Ask the owner to give you a sword.
Swords are hard to make, and even here iron doesn't come cheap. No blacksmith is just going to give me a sword because I ask.
He will if you charm him. Alice gave an exasperated sigh.
Fine. I will do it just to show that you are wrong.
She stomped over to the shop as Waldo waited where he was. Less than 2 minutes later, she came back out again, awkwardly holding a broadsword out in front of her. The people passing on the street stared. It was common enough for men to carry weapons here, but a woman with a sword was a rare sight.
I just looked him in the eyes and asked him if he would give me a sword.
Alice was shifting her weight from one foot to the other and holding the sword as far out from her as she could.
He just nodded and agreed, like it was normal to gift a complete stranger with something like this. I mean, he didn't even try to get me to do anything immoral. He just did what I told him to.
Waldo nodded.
That is how a succubus charm works. It bends the victim's will and makes him completely obedient.
Could you please not call him a victim? I feel bad enough as it is.
Why? For you, this is completely natural. Alice turned her gaze to her feet.
I never knew I was forcing anyone to do what I wanted. When a man would do as I asked, I always figured it was because he wanted to. I know what it's like to be controlled, and I don't want to do it to anyone else.
Well, that's a huge waste of your ability. Waldo noticed she was keeping her face down.
What are you doing? I don't want to charm you by accident. I would hate to think you were only with me because I was forcing you.
He chuckled. You really are something special, Alice. She quickly glanced up, and then just as quickly looked down again. While I appreciate the concern, it's not necessary. There are limits to the charm ability. Women and magic users are immune to it, as are the blind. You cannot simply look at someone and affect them. There must be direct eye contact, and you must feel the desire to have them do as you wish. Even then, if the person has a strong will, they can limit the influence the charm has on them. The effect can be extended as long as you continue to be seen by the person. Once you leave, the charm will wear off within a few days. Alice looked back at him.
Well, that's a relief. I would really hate to think you were with me because I made you.
You have no need to fear, then. I'm with you because you're precious to me. Waldo saw her blush again. He had no idea why.
That's very sweet of you to say, darling. So what do we do with this?
She swung the sword slightly from side to side.
Well, we could find a shop that sells leather goods and get you a free belt and sheath.
I am not keeping it.
What would I use it for? A sword is only made for killing.
The same could be said about your claws.
Those are a part of me, and no one sees them until I'm about to use them.
You're the man, why don't you wear it? A mage carrying a sword on his hip? Barbaric. In any case, my wand is deadlier than any hunk of sharpened iron.
That had not been true when he'd first set out, but it was now.
So, what do we do with this thing? Waldo pointed at a different blacksmith shop. Go in there, look the owner in the eye, and ask him to buy it from you. I'm sure you will get a very fair price without even haggling.
I can't do that. Now that I understand my ability, it would be like stealing.
So?
I like stealing. I have a better idea.
She turned around and walked back to the same shop.
What are you doing? I'm returning this.
You mean for free? Waldo sounded outraged.
I am not going to just rob some stranger.
Does that mean robbing people we know is all right? Closing her eyes and shaking her head, she went into the shop. Chapter 37. Please stop talking now.
You're not allowed to be upset with me.
Waldo cast a stern glance back over his shoulder.
You're not. All I did was return something that I had no right to in the first place.
For free. You're the one who is always worried about how much money we have.
That doesn't mean I want us to steal. It means I want us to earn what we can and spend carefully.
You didn't seem to mind with Roger.
That was different. He wanted to force himself on me.
So it's all right as long as it's any man who wants to have sex with you.
Good. That means we can still rob most of the men in the world.
That's not what I meant. I'm just trying to understand where the line is. I want to know who you're willing to steal from.
It's very simple. Stealing is never all right. Even stealing from Roger was wrong. I was just willing to help because of where he grabbed me is all. I think from now on we should follow all the laws and not cause any trouble.
Have you forgotten who I really am, Alice?
Don't let this brilliant disguise fool you. I am Waldo Corpse Lover, an evil and black-hearted mage. I am without mercy or compassion. The morals of ordinary men mean nothing to me. I am bound by no laws. I am a living, breathing source of terror to all who cross my path.
Alice suddenly pointed behind him.
Oh, is that a rabbit?
Where? He jumped about and his head jerked from side to side as he tried to spot the horrid beast. Alice snickered.
Evil and black-hearted mage, huh?
Waldo stopped panicking and narrowed his eyes at her.
That wasn't funny.
Yes, it was. You really do not have the proper attitude for a familiar.
That's because I'm your wife, darling, not your familiar or your servant.
Waldo decided not to bother correcting her as it would do no good.
Why didn't you mention my being able to charm before?
Why would I? I wouldn't try to explain flying to a bird or swimming to a fish.
But I told you before, I didn't know anything about what I was.
When I met you, you were working at an inn. I simply assumed you were using your charm instinctively. I was right. I just didn't realize you were ignorant of the fact.
You don't have to be mean about it, you know. You have been very rude to me this morning. I have only been trying to help you.
Time is short, he grunted.
What does that mean?
It just means I have a lot of problems to deal with. Now come on, I want to see if this herb shop has anything useful in it.
He picked up his pace.